When we saw the Anthropic block happen on Thursday night, I messaged OpenAI right away being like, hey, you guys have a shot tomorrow to counter position. And like, a lot of people are going to be mad at Anthropic. You guys have a chance to like do the opposite and get a lot of goodwill.
What's up, everyone? It's Nuno here. It would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this channel. I love PHP. I love you all and enjoy the video. Today, we're talking with Dax Rad, the creator of OpenCode. In case you don't know, OpenCode is this open source AI coding agent that helps you write code for your terminal or your IDE or from the Dax more recently. For these developers who haven't done any agentic coding yet, or for someone who have seen Cloud Code from far away, Cloud Code CLI, what is OpenCode and why should they try it?
Yeah, so OpenCode is just us experimenting with using LLMs for coding and figuring out what kind of workflows. We obviously didn't invent this concept. There have been a bunch of different iterations on it. Cloud Code is probably the biggest, most popular one. The idea behind it was, you can strip it down to a very simple terminal application and you can prompt the agent there and it can do work and you can review it. We basically took Cloud Code and did an open source version of it. And to this day, we like follow a lot of Cloud Code's features. The difference is, well, one, ours is open source. Two, we're not locked to a specific provider. You know, Cloud Code, you use Anthropic models with. Open Code, you can use whatever models. Wherever you have access to them, you can plug it in, whether it's directly paying for it or through GitHub Copilot or through your ChatGPT Pro subscription. You can use that with Open Code. And the other major difference is we have tried really, really hard on the terminal interface. There is a lot that you can do in terminals that a lot of people just are not aware of because it's very esoteric technology. For some whatever stupid reason, we have a weird amount of experience with it. So we try to see how far can we push things in the terminal UI. And we're really just getting started. I think what's there right now is the floor. We have a lot more planned as well.
Dude, I'm going to be honest, man. That terminal experience, that terminal UI was the thing that pulled me into OpenCode. You know, yeah. I'm super fan of terminals in general. Like, I have built tools for the terminal too. And I love the terminal, you know. And the first thought that came to me was like, how is possible, like a company like Anthropic, for example, with a massive evaluation, managed to ship a worse experience on a terminal than you guys? You know, yeah. So that was my first reaction to it. So I want to ask you, like, if you can share a little bit some of the tools you are using behind this and what makes OpenCode so great on the terminal? Like, why is it that great?
Yeah. So right now, if you want to build a really fancy terminal app, not right now. Historically, if you want to build a really fancy terminal app and you're in the JavaScript ecosystem, which was a constraint that the Cloud Code team was operating under, there was a library called Ink, which let you use React to like build a terminal UI. So you can kind of like build things in like the nice way that React lets you build things. And then, but instead of rendering to web, it renders to the terminal. The thing is, this library really, I would say, was more like a proof of concept. But again, so few people know how any of the terminal stuff works. It just became stuff that a lot of people ended up using. It was never like that serious of an effort. I think it was more proof of concept that kind of grew into something more, but it's very limited in terms of performance, capability, etc. So I think the Cloud Code team picked that. I don't think particularly intentionally. I think they were just trying to like experiment with this idea that they had, and it ended up hitting, ended up growing massively, like, you know, probably, you know, millions of people that have used it. And now it's like has the weight of the product was really simple originally, and maybe it was okay to use this kind of crappy framework. So I don't want to call it crappy. It's just that it's like, it's not that capable. And now there's like a lot more features that they want to put in there, a lot more people using it across different terminals, operating systems, etc. And that framework they're building on top of, isn't really working well. We took a different approach. We were like, let's just invest upfront in building the ultimate terminal framework. So we built something called OpenTui, which is a Zig library that lets you, that kind of implements all of the complex terminal UI concepts, everything from like a layout engine to like, you know, tracking mouse clicks and knowing when two elements are like intersecting, compositing, so you can have like opacity, you can have the colors blending together. So all the low level like stuff you're kind of used to in the browser, like you can, you know, create blocks and arrange them and do all of that. That's what's in OpenTui. And then that's maintained by someone on our team called Sebastian. He started building it even before we knew each other. He built it on his own for something. We fortunately crossed paths when we decided to like kind of fully fund it. He's amazing. That project is amazing. And we surfaced that low-level Zig library as a React with React bindings or with SolidJS bindings. And we personally use and open code, we use the SolidJS bindings. So it lets us build really crazy stuff. Like in open code, there's like opacity. Like we have dialogues that pop up and stuff behind the dialogues, like dim out. We have like really comprehensive syntax highlighting. We can do all kinds of interesting stuff. But so it's a simple interface. Like we're just using SolidJS and building components in the same way you'd be doing it on web. So like that foundation lets us do a lot of stuff. Like there's no ceiling, more or less, or like we can hit the ceiling what's possible on a terminal, I would say. Claude Code's foundation is they don't have that, so they have a bit more challenge. There's one other thing I will say. There's some upsides to the Claude Code approach. So open code is a full screen two-way experience, like takes over your whole screen and it like,
right,
it basically ignores like your native terminal stuff. So that means we have to re-implement stuff like scrolling, selection, copy paste. We don't do an amazing job with that yet. We do an okay job, but we have to re-implement a lot of stuff that your terminal does natively. Claude Code is not a full screen experience, so it's just writing to stuff than to scroll back. So stuff like scroll, like your native scroll works better, like your terminal's native copy paste works better. But again, there is a different limitation with that. Like they can't do a lot of things in that mode. Whereas for us, we can eventually get very close to the native experience with most of stuff. It's just a matter of work.
I think it's fantastic. And honestly, you feel it even more when you go back to Claude Code CLI, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not when you start with open code, it's when you are in open code for a month and then you go back to Claude Code CLI. And I was like, oh my God, I feel like I have, you know, go back in time literally. But, you know, The terminal is awesome. I have to say, dude. And, you know, I think like when I'm streaming about open code, and I've been done that a lot recently, a lot of people just ask me, all right, what are you using to use Claude Code currently? And I said, I'm using the API key. And they said something like, all right, so how the hell are they doing money, you know? So I have one question for you, if you're okay on sharing it. What exactly is currently the business model behind OpenCode, where the money comes from to literally just pay all this open source work? Because you just mentioned it's open source, so how exactly, you know, who pays the bills here?
Yeah. So the open source model is not very well understood. A lot of people try to start companies around it. Most of them fail. People call, I think I saw Aaron Boodman, the founder of Xero. He called it like a double miracle business, because you need to first have the miracle of having an amazing open source product that a lot of people use. Like, it can't be a few people. It's got to be like, if you're going to do the open source thing, you're shooting for the whole entire market. That's the point of doing an open source thing. So you need that miracle. Then you need another miracle where you need a completely separate product that sits on top of it that you know, people can pay for. And you never want to make the mistake of turning that primary open source product into a paid product, or like removing features from there and making it paid, because that just eventually kills it. Like the whole point of open source is you're trying to build something that as many people in the world can use as possible. You know, there's 30 to 50 million developers in the world. There's no reason all of them can't at least try open code. We never want to make it so that anything gets in their way of doing that. So for us, this with open code, it's actually pretty simple. If a large company, and a lot of large companies are doing this, they are rolling out open code to 1,000 developers, there's a set of just logistical problems that they have. They can tell every single developer to go download open code, but then each of them needs like an Anthropic API key. They don't want to go issue an Anthropic key for each developer, and then they like quit and they have to disable the key, or the key gets like, you know, all that like management stuff. So they just need like a control plane where they can set up things once, set up the API key once, integrate with their internal auth. When the end developer runs open code, it'll like log in through that. They'll get temporary credentials, all of that. They can set budget limits. Like you can only spend $500 a month. They can see analytics. So that product is what, we charge for it. It sort of exists. Like we have some initial customers that are using it. It's not fully there yet, but that's how we'll make money. So with open source, it's always a pyramid, right? There's a pyramid. It's a good pyramid, not a pyramid scheme. Mm-hmm. The bottom of your pyramid, the base, is the end developer, like the data developer that's choosing to use open code. Maybe they're not paying you. They have no intention of paying you. But the top is where the enterprise is. And that's where you make all your money. But the size of the top is a function of how big the base is. So if you have 1 million users versus 30 million users, that's what impacts how much money you can make at the top. So we're very focused on just making this a really great tool that's adopted by a lot of people, because that's what causes enterprise imbalance. And that's where we make money. That's our primary setup right now. This might change over time. Like our inference business is actually growing quite a bit, and we never really intended to make much money there, but it's turning out to start to make money. So Yeah.
We are going to talk about the long-term plans of OpenCode at the end of the interview. But meanwhile, I want to ask you something, because it always comes on my streams again. People, when they go to the OpenCode website, they see the word Zen, but they go to the GitHub repo, they see anomaly. So I wonder if you could kind of briefly explain a little bit what is anomaly, what is Zen, and in terms of structure that powers this OpenCode project.
Yep, gotcha. It's a little confusing. So our corporate company name is called Anomaly. We're not new. We've been around for a very long time, been doing stuff at open source for a very long time. OpenCode is one of our products. Given how big it's gotten, it's like our main focus. But the team behind it is the Anomaly team. We're about a team of 10 now. OpenCode Zen is, so like I said, OpenCode is designed to use with anything. Bring your own provider, configure however you want. We're not trying to make you use anything specific. But for people that want like a nice out of the box experience, they don't want to go sign up for Anthropic manually or to OpenAI and set up all their keys. We have a single service you can sign up for, OpenCode Zen. And that gives you access to all the best coding models at really competitive pricing as well. So that's like an optional thing you can choose to sign up for and use with OpenCode.
And like Cloud Code, basically OpenCode supports multiple models, multiple providers. But recently Anthropic, which is one of those providers, had a few restrictions which literally impacted OpenCode. So I want to ask you if you could walk us through, like, share your perspective. Why do you think Anthropic made this move? And if this move was directly targeting OpenCode, or OpenCode was just a side effect of this? What can you share? What is the story behind this?
Yeah, so in the market, there are some interesting pricing things that exist, right? So Anthropic came out with this $200 a month subscription plan where you pay that fixed amount and you get quite a lot of inference behind it. There's some limits, but they're like really, really generous, like uneconomically generous, as like they're not like for that direct $200 plan. You are getting quite a lot of money out of it. From very early on, OpenCode had an auth plugin system, so you could bring in additional providers that OpenCode doesn't natively understand. And there is a very popular Anthropic plugin that lets you use your Claude Max subscription with Anthropic. This has always been against their terms of service. This is not something that they like officially endorsed. But you know, like a good chunk of people enjoyed using OpenCode with that. It's not the majority of our users. It's not like a large amount, but given we're at a million active users, even 10% is, you know, 100,000 people, right? The Anthropic, of course, is creating that plan to get you to use Claude Code so that you like to use Claude Code, so that your team starts to use Claude Code, so that they can sell your team an enterprise contract, which is not a subscription. It's like there's seat-based pricing and there's pay-as-you-go token pricing. So that's where they make a good amount of money. So like their idea is try to get people to use it with the max subscription, you know, eventually trickle down to their team and that's where they make their money. That's their funnel. So you can see why if people are using Claude Code, Claude Max with a different, tool, maybe they're not super happy about that because that's not how like their plan works or that's not how their strategy works. So at some point, a couple weeks ago, they attempted to block, OpenCode users initially, it was like a generic block. Eventually, it became like an OpenCode specific block. They were trying to like find anyone that was an OpenCode user and block them. There's a lot of confusion around this. So, it's their company, right? They can enforce their terms however they want. It's not immoral. It's not bad. They have their strategy. They need to like make sure it works. They're totally allowed to block people. Legally, an end user is allowed to work around that block. There's nothing illegal about you being like, I'm paying for the service. I can access it however I want. Totally, extremely well protected by law. Lots of cases, historical cases around this. You're allowed to access it however you want. The company is allowed to block you however they want. So it's like a fair, you know, one-to-one situation. So of course, given our massive open source community, any block they tried to put out within 15, 20 minutes, someone found a workaround. So I think right now it like currently works. Like they tried to block it, it still works. It's extremely hard for them to block it because they can't block it in a way that breaks old Claude Code clients. So like it's like a cat and mouse thing. So we had known that this was going to be something that they tried at some point, given we understood their underlying strategy. We have the opposite strategy, right? Like the entire idea is I don't believe you need to be so loyal to a model that you need to use, that you should have to use the model and all the other tooling and set up all your workflows around Claude Code specifically, which just makes it really hard to switch to a different model if, OpenAI or someone else comes out with something more compelling. Anthropic knows that that will happen, or they're at risk of that happening. So they want to get you fully into their ecosystem as possible. We don't have that approach. We have a different approach. But we knew that, you know, we were counter-positioned this way. So they would kind of try to like push, you know, try to like block this kind of thing. So we've been working for months, like talking to other LLM providers and trying to get it, trying to get them to officially support open code. I think a lot of people saw this and thought, oh, this all happened after Anthropic blocked it. But we had been working with GitHub for a while. So GitHub now officially supports open code. When we saw the Anthropic block happen on Thursday night, I messaged OpenAI right away being like, hey, you guys have a shot tomorrow to counter position. And like a lot of people are going to be mad at Anthropic. You guys have a chance to like do the opposite and get a lot of goodwill. And they jumped on the opportunity and they moved really quickly. So now your ChatGPT Pro subscription can be used with open code. And we've announced since then GitLab as well. We have a few other big players that are going to officially support open code in the next couple of weeks. So at this point, the positioning is, you know, Anthropic fully trying to do the full stack, fully vertically integrated thing. Rest of the market, they're trying to just provide the LLM and let you use whatever end tools you want to use. But yeah, it's obviously upset a lot of people.
Oh, it did. I was one of them, honestly. So and since that moment, I actually started using the API directly, meaning the, you know, via API key. And my budget went for $500 in 2 weeks just for Claude Opus 4.5, you know, which is not crazy, but it might be crazy. It might be a little bit, you know, so in a month we'll be 1,000. So changing a little bit of topics here. Recently, you introduced Open Code Black. We have a question from the chat, which is when the next batch of Black accounts will be activated. And maybe you can explain a little bit what Open Code Black is.
Yeah. So given like we saw Anthropic offering this $200 plan, and they have like a $20, $100, $200 plan. We have been very curious to understand the data usage behind these, like the average $20 user, how much do they use, the average $100, how much they use, average $200, how much they use, to see if can we offer something similar. Of course, we're never going to be able to offer the same amount of limits that Anthropic can. They have one, a lot more money, and two, they have a pricing advantage because it's their own model. But what we can offer is a subscription that lets you use many models. So you can use GPT models and you can use Claude models. There's a really good reason to use both. I use both day to day. Some people don't care about that. Some people just want to use one, which makes sense. Just go use the provider subscription plan. But we want to see, can we offer something that is compelling at those price points? So we're rolling it out slowly, more one because of a capacity reason, and two, like we need to understand usage patterns and figure out what limits are. We're going to roll out a batch today. So a bunch of people will get access today. And we're going to take it from there. Realistically, like we don't know if this is something we're going to do long term. For us, this is more about like answering these questions of like, what kind of system can you create around this stuff? It might be unsustainable. You know, as we scale, we can get discounts that other people can't get access to. So that kind of helps us. But yeah, it's like a whole like math. It's like a very basic math problem.
You were mentioning now understanding all these models, and I just told you that Claude Opus 4.5 went expensive for me, especially with this API key. I want to ask you like your workflow. Like, I'm literally curious, what is your favorite model? What is your workflow combo right now? Which model you use for planning, for execution? Do you have a crazy sub-agent system? What is your setup at the minute?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before. I feel like I invented a skateboard and I'm like okay at using it, and then someone else does like all this crazy stuff that I didn't even know was possible. So even though I like make open code, that doesn't mean that I'm like the craziest user of it. I use it vanilla, very simple, very basic. When Opus 4.5 came out, I think like a lot of people, I started using it because it was, I wouldn't say that much smarter than the previous versions, but it was just like polished. Like it did the right thing I asked it to do. It didn't go crazy. Like the errors were very low. So I started getting really into Opus. More lately, I've been trying to get better at using GPT 5.2 Codex. Given one, OpenAI is now officially supporting open code. Two, they've made several announcements about how they're going to make it a lot faster. That's my number one issue with Codex. It's a little too slow for the type of work I want to do. So for me, I've been increasing the size of tasks I've been giving to these things. I'll flip between Opus and Codex 5.2. I'll maybe have some parallel going, nothing too crazy. I think generally I really only have one at a time. With Codex, you're kind of encouraged to do more in parallel because it is slow. But yeah, like I think those are two models that I use currently. I'm hoping we improve our Codex support and Codex gets better. and maybe I can go fully in on the Codex stuff. That's kind of where I'm looking at right now. But I don't know, very competitive market, lots of things changing. 2026 is going to be the year of open source models. We're going to see some crazy drops, so that might also change things.
What is that feature or that capability that you haven't shipped yet because it's hard or too controversial, but you would love to have it at Open Code?
So I think the next major thing in the Open Code TUI, at least, is a review page or a review screen. So right now, I think a lot of us have the flow of we prompt it, we let it run, and it's made a bunch of changes. Now we need to like look over the changes, and you can use your editor, you can do like a git diff, you can like, you know, see what's happened, but we can provide something in app that's native. So it's probably gonna be another screen that you can flip to, and you can see all the changes that happened in the session, the files that changed. Ideally, you can like select sections and then give it back to feedback to the LLM so you can prompt it again. So that's I think every app in this category is going to have something like that. Like Cursor kind of already has something like that. So we're going to bring this into the terminal. This is an example of something that, you know, like Cloud Code couldn't do this because their terminal setup is more minimal. We can do something pretty advanced here.
So that's exactly how I use Open Code, by the way. I use Open Code on the left, and I have this GitHub UI on the right, which allows me to review the produced code. And I honestly think that will be just a default IDE for everyone in the next 3-4 months. People want to just, you know, chat with AI, and AI will produce code, but you also want to review it at the same time. That's the true flow of agentic coding, in my opinion. And, you know, we started with no auto-completion at all decades ago, then went to auto-completion with better IDEs like PHP Storm and JetBrains. Now we have terminal agents on the CLI, but we now also see these desktop UIs that are literally spawning tasks, see the outcome, validate the code. I want to ask you if you think personally that this will be the perfect IDE experience in the next 12 months for everyone, or do you think it's going even further than this?
Yeah, so we are also building Open Code Desktop, which is our experimentation with what does a dedicated Open Code desktop app look like. And it's not an editor. Like, it doesn't let you edit files. It's not meant to replace your editor. So yeah, it's just really narrowing in on this prompt review loop, make it really good to review. And I think the direction we're also going in is the next iteration of Open Code's core is it's going to be able to orchestrate agents across many like environments. So you can have agents running in different Git work trees. You can have agents running in a remote sandbox. You can have like a lot of stuff going on. And the desktop app might have to turn it. There might be a screen in the desktop app that lets you like coordinate all these different things. We can kind of plan out work, you know, kick it off to 10 agents, have them all working and kind of like see everything and review stuff. That is very different than an editor. It's very different than something like Cursor. That's very different than like the GitHub UI. So I don't think that's something that every single person is going to use, but we are experimenting with that. But yeah, I think there is definitely room for what does a desktop app, what does a GUI actually look like now that maybe editing for some people is not the primary thing.
I honestly feel like if you can have that review experience on a terminal, that will just be perfect for me. I don't want anything else. That will be it. The peak of productivity for Nuno, for sure. Huh? Within 2 years from now, where do you think Open Code will be? What is the perfect outcome? Like, if you could snap your fingers and just have the future of Open Code in 2 years from now, in Anomaly, in Xen, in XYZ, like, what would be the perfect outcome for this story?
Yeah, I think I'd love to have Open Code be available in every single form that it can exist. So we have the TUI, we have a desktop app. I'd love to have a mobile app. I want to make sure our editor integrations are very good. They're not very good right now. Open Code's meant to be embedded. It's like there's a reusable core, so it should get embedded in every possible place that it can. So that's what I'm hoping. We can have like a very compelling offering in that way. And I also want to make sure that, you know, working with teams is really great. So we've barely done much teams features. The other thing that's also been surprising is the Open Code SDK has a ton of usage. It's also something that we haven't put that much effort into. So I'd love to polish up the Open Code SDK, make it so you can programmatically call it, script things like stuff in your CI. People are doing all kinds of crazy stuff with the SDK. So yeah, our scope is like super wide, and I just love to have full coverage of it. I don't know what coding is going to look like in 2 years. I try not to like be like obsessed with, oh, in 2 years, you know, it's going to be like this and all engineers. I'm like really tired of that conversation. I'm just taking it a day at a time. And it's made coding more and more fun for me. So I'm happy with that. And I'll take
a day at a time. When you said mobile, it just reminded me of Taylor. Like, literally the other day, a dude was telling me, wouldn't it be cool, like, being on a beach on the umbrella, having a cocktail and just literally asking tasks to my mobile phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus Christ. Dude, you said that you try to not guess the future. I have a question on that one, because recently I've been, you know, we all have Twitter and you know how Twitter is. I don't know how your timeline looks like at the minute, but my timeline, I feel I'm getting bombarded with literally every fucking single day stuff about AI, you know? That is OpenCode that did that. That is ChatGPT that did that. And that is Cloud Code who now can do way more stuff. And that is this new model which is way better than doing this. And the other model can do much better. And we are all screwed again. And it's just so... Sometimes it's a little bit frustrating. And I get scared. And if I get scared and I have like a job at Laravel and I have a YouTube channel in XYZ, I cannot even imagine a junior developer coming to the scene. Yeah. You know? So yeah. I want to ask you, like, do you have thoughts on this? What do you think junior developers should adapt, learn differently? Like, what do you think? Like, what would be your advice for junior developers?
I have a hard time because I think about how I use these things. I think about they've definitely gotten so much better than they were years ago. But there's a whole class of things that hasn't changed. Like, I am still spending so much brain power. I feel like more brain power than ever thinking about, like, what should we be working on? How should it be built? I still feel like, I mean, a lot of people are taking the route of, oh, you know, the like code is no longer something you need to look at. It is like a compiler artifact. It's like the AI generates, or the AI iterates on, and the AI does whatever. And you don't have to look at it. You're just directing it what features you want. I haven't seen that at all. Like, I think I just don't think people have worked on stuff for super long in this form because AI makes a huge mess. It like never writes the exact code that is exactly what I want. And if I'm just continuing to do that every single day, it starts to get worse. Like, it can't deal with a bad code base either. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. it's less annoying for you can like tell the AI to go fix a bad code base versus you having to go into it. That is nice, but it's also just better not to have a bad code base. And I think a lot of the stuff that is historically been true of like what makes a maintainable code base, what's readable, what is well organized. I mean, if you think about, I don't know why people talk about the agent like has no preference. It definitely has a preference, right? You think about what's good for a human. When you open a new project, a good file structure, right? There's like high level concepts, right. Things are organized into right folders. You can kind of guess what's in the folders based off of how they're named. If you want to add a new feature, you can kind of immediately have a sense of where it should go. Yeah. If you're looking for an existing feature, you kind of have a sense of where it is. Those are all great things to do in a code base for a human. The agent works the exact same way. It like does a glob on your file system and sees the folders. The better those are organized, the better it can find stuff. So people are treating this thing like, oh, code base quality is no longer a thing that matters. I don't think that's true. In fact, when I started using coding agents, I actually had the opposite effect for me. There was a bunch of inconsistencies in our code base that weren't a huge deal because I'm like, a human can like understand that there's old code. We don't do stuff the way we used to do in the old code anymore. And like we do stuff in this new way. And we haven't fully cleaned the old stuff, but it's fine. Yeah, but the agent sees the old stuff and it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to do stuff like that. And it motivated me to clean up my code base a ton because the more clean it was, the better the agent performed. And I got the full value out of it. So if you are a junior, yes, all this stuff is there. To be honest, I try not to give too much advice for junior engineers because this is like a new, different world than I was, like whatever made sense when I was a junior. I don't know. I can't really tell what people are dealing with nowadays. I don't really have that much advice, but personally, I think being a good programmer is still extremely valuable. We are getting a ton out of AI. We're all pretty decent programmers, and I think that is related. So I still think it can't hurt to be good at programming. And I think it's easier than ever to get good at programming because you have this amazing tutor that's available that I didn't have, that nobody else had, you know, 10 years ago. So in a lot of ways, you do have a good opportunity.
Now, I think your answer was top-notch. I would just add that, you know, what I typically see on my streams that code quality is now more important than ever. If you have a nice starter kit in your project with really nice conventions, AI will just follow. If you have coded a feature in the perfect way, AI will just mimic that feature for the new feature you are requesting. And things like type coverage, code coverage, strict typing, all that stuff is now even more important than ever because they are going to guide the AI producing code quality, literally. This is true for PHP, for JavaScript, for TypeScript, for whatever language you are using. One last game for you before you go. I really appreciate, by the way, all the interviews so far. And we're going to close this with a rapid fire game. I'm going to throw to you 5 rapid fire questions and you have to answer super fast. And you cannot say it depends or I don't know. Okay. You just have to pick You have to pick an answer and fast. And just as an example, if I were to ask you, do you prefer PHP or JavaScript? You probably would answer instantly JavaScript. Okay?
Right.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's go. JavaScript or TypeScript?
TypeScript.
Laravel or Rails?
Laravel.
From 1 to 10, how bad is working with David Hill? 10 is super bad. 1 is good.
Like a 7?
Question number 4. Did Vercel ever try to hire you?
Yes.
Every single guess, man, I have your answers yes on that one. Last question. Funny. So I just made a pull request to OpenAI to add Laravel Pint as a PHP formatter. Yes or no? If I send you the link after this interview, will you just press the merge button?
Yes, we will merge it.
Here we go. Chat, thank you so much for joining me, Dax. Chat, if you enjoyed this conversation, please don't forget, hit the like, subscribe, and tell me in the comments, what do you think about OpenCode and the work they are doing? Bam, bam, boom. Dax, that was awesome, man. Thank you so much.